T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Now here. But if you're looking toward, you know, rebuilding with all these picks you're getting and a younger team, but you can get an established star like Oladipo, and then let's face it, you know, John Wall's not young, and they're stuck with him probably till the end of this very big contract. So maybe they're just looking at it as Oladipo's the more known quantity, a guy that you know can go and get you a bucket at any time, assuming he's back to full health.
Howard Beck here on 95.7 The Game. So before they've even played a game together, we don't even know where the man is, but Harden has already given Kyrie an assist because, boy, did he get the world's headlines off "where is Kyrie" to, "hey, look at this trade." Where is Kyrie, and are the Nets just playing with a very dangerous precedent early on in Steve Nash's tenure by just allowing AWOL to be normal?
Well, we got to put a massive caveat on this, which is that we don't know why Kyrie is gone. We don't. The Nets presumably do, and we do not. So whatever, you know, I know it doesn't look good when video, you know, surfaces of him at a birthday party for his sister. I know that, you know, he pops up on a Zoom call with a Manhattan district attorney candidate last night, which was curious. Those things don't necessarily mean that he doesn't have a good reason to be gone right now. And again, we don't know what it is. So all that said, I do think that getting James Harden, while my first concern on a basketball level would be how does three high-usage guys who all are used to having the ball in their hands a lot function? Can they figure this out? There's this other element here, which is the uncertainty of this team. You know, Kevin Durant is what, like 10 games into his comeback or something. And while he's looked pretty good, we still don't really know. Like, we can't just decide, okay, that's fine. The Achilles injury, which was so devastating for generations of NBA players, is suddenly not a concern anymore. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. He may be the first to truly defy the history of that injury, but I think that it's still an open-ended question as to how long Kevin Durant can play at an elite level on a reconstructed Achilles. And Kyrie Irving, all the other things aside, has an injury history. And so maybe Harden is also just a hedge against the uncertainties of the other two players. And if I'm not suggesting that Kyrie's not coming back, I don't know. I just don't know. But given how strange this particular saga has been, if for some reason he's not available to them, or they can't be certain how often he'll be available to them, then Harden is a hedge against that too.
The Kyrie situation specifically, we got reports today that, you know, part of this is he is upset with the Steve Nash hire, which, you know, kind of tracks with comments he made when the hire was made. But also, how do you read this? Is this Kyrie not realizing that this is Kevin Durant's team and not his?
I don't know, guys. I mean, there have been a lot of this is not to dispute anybody's reporting. There have been a lot of things that have seeped out in places over the last week or so about Kyrie and his mindset and what is driving him and what, you know, why he's gone. I don't think we know for sure what to put stock in right now. So I'm not going to assume this is about Steve Nash or about his relationship with Durant or anything else.
The other team that was interested in Harden was Philadelphia. So that either way, Harden was going to go back to what is in some ways a familiar situation. Were those the only teams that were interested because those were the only teams that Harden would consider going to? or were those the only teams that were interested in engaging in the process at all?
I think that when, you know, so last night Harden in his postgame presser basically just throws everyone under the bus, dumps on his entire team, and suddenly things accelerate. And so while the Rockets, I think, had been trying to canvass the league and you know, investigate every possibility, I think once that happened last night and it's now clear, like, we have a crisis on our hands, we can't afford to have him around anymore, you know, the locker room is just going to be a mess, and we saw the comments of Wall and Cousins. At that point, you're just saying, all right, who's ready right now? And so teams like Toronto or Boston or Miami, who declared themselves out a couple weeks ago, and, you know, you always take that with a grain of salt, I just think that those teams, you know, whatever level of interest they may have had, it clearly wasn't that strong. And besides that, the Rockets needed to deal with teams that they could extract the most assets from, period. So I don't think this was solely about getting Harden where he wanted to go. It happens to be that they sent him where he wanted to go. I'm sure they would have been more than happy to send him to, you know, Utah or Siberia if they could have gotten the best trade package back. But Siberia gave a lot of their draft picks up in previous deals and just really was not in the mix. The Rockets' goal, I think, was what was best for the Rockets. And I'm going to assume that this outcome was the best that they could do. And it's not terrible. Like, it given how little leverage they had and the urgency that suddenly came with last night's press conference with Harden, they did okay. They got a ton of picks. They got Oladipo, who's been an all-star. And, you know, I'd rather have Ben Simmons, but I don't know if we're certain that Ben Simmons was truly available or how far the Sixers are willing to go on this.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Howard. You know how much we admire your work. Sports Illustrated's very lucky to have you, as are we, whenever you come on our show. Thanks very much.
Very kind. Appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Absolutely. Howard Beck, one of the best in the business at covering the NBA. And again, Brooklyn is in his backyard. That's where he's based. So good stuff from him. And look, I mean, he's right. When it comes to trying to figure out what is in Kyrie's mind, like, good luck with that. It feels like Kyrie doesn't even know what's in his own mind half the time, or it changes day to day. When we come on back, your calls certainly welcome in here. 888-957-9570 is the number. A blockbuster NBA trade, which has been the focus of pretty much everything we've done. You heard Howard mention about how last night seemed to be the point of no return and Harden threw guys under the bus. Well, the bus came back to run over Harden after his comments. That bus was being driven by Boogie Cousins, by John Wall. We will hear from them. We hope to hear from you. 888-957-9570. We've also got Steve Kerr at 505. If you missed him earlier, you're going to want to stick around. Steve Kerr, as the Warriors get ready for a road trip. They're in Denver tomorrow. They were supposed to be in Phoenix on Friday, but that game has been postponed due to Suns COVID concerns. So an awful lot happening. I love the NBA. It is fantastic. We are brought to you by Outdoor Supply Hardware. Osh's newest location in Millbrae is hiring full-time, part-time career positions, offering great benefits, flexible schedules, and generous employee discounts. Visit osh.com today, /careers. That is osh.com/careers. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game, and apparently, if you were watching, you could tell that something was about to happen to Houston's time with James Harden in the game, before he even got to the post-game press conference where everybody started pointing fingers at everybody else. I guess some of those finger pointings were going on the court, where it looked like DeMarcus Cousins and Harden got into it. As they were walking off the court, going to the locker room at halftime, it looked like DeMarcus had his finger right in Harden's chest in one picture that I saw. Ryan Russillo, who you all know we like having on the show very much, he even tweeted last night, if you haven't watched this Rockets team, I urge you that you don't miss out on one of the most miserable teams I've seen in years. You got a checked out Harden. You got peak Boogie Cousins. You got wood threes. You got role players getting mad at starters. Like, catch it before it's over. Well, folks, it is over because the trade heard around the NBA world happened this afternoon as Harden gets sent to the Brooklyn Nets. Two other teams involved, many other players, draft picks galore, but Harden out of Houston and in Brooklyn without Kyrie being involved as a principal in this trade. It's a showstopper. We've been talking about it ever since it happened. Apparently last night, James Harden's performance was a little bit of an error or an era stopper, if you will. For the first time since being traded to Houston, James Harden had four games in a row where he did not score more than 20 points. All you need to do is look at him, and there's a guy who's not ready to play at a high level, even if he had a good night. He's wildly out of shape. He's carrying 20, 30 extra pounds on him. He looks puffy. He looks bloated. And he looked like, Ray and Matt, like a guy who was very comfortable just jogging between the three-point lines, and that was about it. It was a YMCA weekend warrior-level effort out of James Harden last night. I don't know if you caught it or saw it on the highlights, but it was inglorious, to say the least.
The only problem with that is that I've seen Harden in incredible shape do that, too. It's just that he's rounder doing it. At least he was rounder doing it the last few games in Houston. And there was a big debate about whether he was in fact out of shape or just wearing like a, you know, extra padded warm up before. But just watching the way he moves, he was a little bit like the way he was the night that Houston, you know, made two of their last 27 threes. It was just, he was disengaged in ways that most players can't manage. Because when James Harden is disengaged, there's nobody who doesn't know it. And I don't know that last night was particularly different from what I saw, but it's well within keeping of what James Harden is when he doesn't feel like playing hard.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing to me. You know what James Harden looks like most of the time? He looks like a guy who's going to lose in the playoffs. I mean, that's the most succinct way I'm going to put it. That's why, even though Steve Kerr says it and a lot of Warrior fans feel like, man, there were some challenges there with Houston, never for one moment, not when the Warriors were losing Game 6 down 3-2 in the series, did I think Houston was going to beat that Warriors team. Because they were always led. And look, maybe this is me judging a book by its cover too much, but whether it's the demeanor, the approach to defense, James Harden, since becoming a Houston Rocket and being a team leader, has always looked to me like a guy who's getting ready to lose in the playoffs, period. Like, that's his identity, as far as I'm concerned. Now, that's different if he's not the team leader, and that's what's going to be interesting to see with the Nets.
You know, it's weird, man, and I'm not trying to fluff your statement at all, but to me, he looked like a tank who was ready to drop 45 in a playoff game, so you better look the hell out. Like, this guy could beat you. It was the shortcoming, I think, of his inability to play well with teammates and then his teammates' own shortcomings around him that held him back, and an overall head coach who just was not married to any defensive concepts, even in the postseason whatsoever. I mean, if P.J. Tucker wasn't playing any defense, there was nobody in the Rockets organization playing any defense.
But that's the thing. At a certain point, that falls on the team leader, too. Steph is not a good defender, but he puts effort in on that end to make it clear that dogging it doesn't fly here defensively.
Right. He's not absent. He's not totally absent of it either.
Yeah, when James Harden is out there just ignoring defense, it sets a tone.
Yeah, and the caller before who said that you can't be a leader if you're not on the floor. Well, I mean, Stephen Curry missed most last year. I don't think he wasn't leading. I mean, that's being a leader is not what you do on the floor alone. It's what you do all the time. And you don't have to be loud to do it. And you don't have to be demonstrative to do it. And you don't have to average 30 a game to do it. But you have to be committed to doing it every day in the way that you normally do it. And the problem with Harden as a leader was that when he didn't feel like leading, it was part and parcel with him not feeling like playing. And that's why I've always questioned whether, in fact, he was the leader of the Rockets or he was just the best guy on his own agenda.
Well, last night, when the game was over, James Harden decided to lead off his press conference by just pointing the finger at everyone but himself and saying, basically, we have reached event horizon when it comes to me and the Houston Rockets. Here is Harden last night after his game.
We're just not good enough. You know, we don't obviously chemistry, talent-wise, just everything. And it was clear, like I said, these last few games. I love this city. I literally have done everything that I can. You know, I mean, this situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, yeah, thanks.
I mean, that's not how a mature man looks at the end of an era. That's how a fumbling teenager awkwardly breaks up with a girlfriend. I mean, that is just, we tried everything in my power. I can't try anymore. I've tried as hard as I can when obviously that is not true. It's just really, really weird. So he spends his post-game press conference basically saying to everyone, look, it's not me. It's her. And then here comes her. In this case, the remaining Houston Rockets. Let's start with DeMarcus Cousins, who last night basically said James Harden had a problem with his team and he was showing us a level of disrespect long before the interview he just gave to you. Here's Boogie Cousins.
Me personally, I don't feel betrayed at all, to be brutally honest. And with that being said, the disrespect started way before, you know, any interview. Just the approach to the training camp, showing up the way he did, the antics off the court, I mean, the disrespect started way before. So this isn't something that all of a sudden happened, you know, last night. But with that being said, this is the nasty part of the business. It is what it is.
Okay, let's take it a step further. How about an even newer guy in the room? John Wall, you just got here. This is the world that you stepped into. What do you think of what's going on, John Wall? Here's what he had to say.
Any day, a lot of guys here want to compete at a high level. And like I told everybody tonight, I told the guys before, when the 1 through 15 guys all on the same page and they commit, they know their role, they know what they want to do, they know what they want to get out of this, and that's the win, you all will be fine. But when you have certain guys in the mix that don't want to buy in all as one, it's going to be hard to do anything special or do anything good as a basketball team. I've been on those teams. My 11 years been in the league. I've been on a team like that my first 5 years where it was all about me, not about the team. And that hurts. And it brings everybody down. So when we can get all on the same page, we can be something good here. And we can't dwell down on it because it's only been 9 games. Like, come on, man. You want to jump off the cliff off of 9 games? There's a lot of basketball still to be played.
So you got two established NBA stars saying, you know, I've been around this league a long time. There are ways to do it. This ain't the way to do it. It's not the way to do it. It's unprofessional. You can't be so selfish. Boogie's talking about the man's weight, the man's inability to report to training camp on time. It was getting bad. And Harden, he wanted out bad, and he wasn't about to try to make it better in the name of saving his own professionalism, because this is where I guess a generation of athletes isn't as concerned about their professional reputations as maybe they used to be. You know, I am my scoring average, not my professional reputation. That's what Kyrie Irving is banking on. And that's definitely what James Harden was banking on to carry him at the end. I'm going to be out of shape. I'm going to be half-assing it in games, and people are still going to want to trade for me because that's how special I am. And that's a level of unprofessional that needs to be pointed out by professionals saying this ain't it.
And it's not irony, but John Wall played for the Washington Wizards for most of his career, and this is a step down. And that's saying something given where the Washington Wizards have been all these years. I mean, John Wall got to a worse situation from Washington. That's extraordinary.
It'd be like Frank Gore traded to a worse team than the New York Jets. Like, how's that going to happen?
Rutgers.
Piscataway, baby.
What's really astonishing about that, because it's true, is that what made it a terrible situation is the superstar who was there. Like, they may not be a better team today, but they're a better situation. The Houston Rockets, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if everyone in the room is taking their career professionally, that alone makes the situation better.
Yeah, exactly. Just a better group of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to have an absurd level of talent. There's another thing to just be a standard pro. And I know that the absurd level of talent gets the attention and the special treatment, but the pro is the person that you can count on year in, year. I mean, here's the thing. Like, look, I wasn't very happy that Kevin Durant left. I think he left the situation that is ridiculous to leave. I guess took it a little personal offense that he didn't look around at the Bay Area and see the same Xanadu that I see. Like, why would you ever leave? Like, you could live anywhere you want. You live here. X marks the spot. Why would you want to go anywhere else? This place is awesome. I think there was a little, like, I was upset about that a little bit because I reached that conclusion on my own, and I want other people to agree with me. So he should feel the same way about this place that I do. And, oh, look at this new building that they built for the guy basically to come in and dominate in. And, like, it's all – everything is so set up to succeed. What are you walking away for now? And I got upset. But not for a singular minute was Kevin Durant unprofessional. Not for one. He might have made choices I didn't like or agree with or understand. But he was never unprofessional. You never got anything other than Kevin Durant's best effort to win this game, for me to win this possession every single night. Kevin Durant never spent a day of his career, 1 ounce overweight. Never. I mean, like, the guy is a consummate professional. I'm out. I'm watching him warm up. The Nets are taking on the New York Knicks tonight. I'm sure they'd love to have Kyrie Irving out there for this big battle of New York City, but he ain't to be found anywhere. But there's Kevin Durant. Total pro. Going through the motions. Getting ready to give you all he's got to give on the court. And then do his media obligation. I might not like the way he did it, but he'll do it. He won't skip it. He won't shirk it. Guy's a pro. And I when you measure a professional who disappoints you as opposed to an unprofessional who's disappointing you, it's like there's no contest.
Yeah, it's you know, the Kevin Durant thing is to me very simple. He saw what he saw out of the Warriors, and he wanted to try something new. It wasn't a repudiation of the Warriors. It was, I've seen this. Now I'd like to see what something else looks like. And what he's got so far is a team that clearly would like to win it all and has put resources to doing it, but they haven't gotten full buy-in yet from the second guy on that team. So they went out and got a new second guy. And I think Kevin Durant's going to look at that and go, yeah, okay, I'm good with that. Because the Nets, for whatever, you know, sort of misbegotten ideas they had about Kyrie Irving, they look like they've moved on. And even if Irving stays and plays, it will be clear that in whatever world pecking orders matter in basketball, he's the third option now. And I don't know how well that's going to sit with him, and I don't know how long it's going to sit well with him. Because I think he doesn't last till the end of the year. I think they look at this and go, you know what? It might be working, but my head hurts every night when I go to bed. That's not worth it. Because I don't think he's ever going to let up from being the me first and me only guy that he's always been. And I don't know that you win championships when one of your three guys is that.
Yeah, I think, honestly, if we're talking about winning championships, the bigger problem is that two of their three guys don't play defense. I'm just going to keep saying that until something convinces me otherwise. But, yeah, Kevin Durant, I don't think he misjudged anything or underestimated anything about the Warriors. I think he may have misjudged and underestimated some things about Kyrie Irving. Like, I think Kevin Durant knew exactly what he had here, and he'd had enough of it for whatever reason. I think when he said, I'll go play with Kyrie, he was not prepared for this to happen this quickly. And it's going to be very interesting whether or not the James Harden experience is similar for him. Like, I don't even know exactly how that would play itself out, but I am intrigued to see whether he knows James Harden as well as he thinks he does.
He definitely took a shot on Kyrie that you could say might not be working out. The one guy that he had to get to know, you know, Steph Curry, is someone he wouldn't even be willing to wait for his plane to land to talk about whether or not he was going to leave the team when Steph was flying back from China. I mean, I thought that that was a little bit disrespectful. The whole thing about Durant is I never felt like he – I thought that for a guy who valued efficiency in his game – that he would never find more efficiency than the efficiency he was finding with the Warriors, and that that basketball beauty would trump what I thought was outside noise that drove him out of town. Like, if he didn't have a Twitter account, I think he'd still be a Golden State Warrior. I think the noise and the displeasure of him choosing to come to Golden State had as much to do with him leaving as him wanting a new challenge. I think he took the suggestion of going to find a bigger challenge because Twitter wasn't applauding the challenge that he took to come to the Warriors. And I just felt that noise had an awful lot to do with it. But that's neither really here nor there, because Kyrie Irving is the kind of guy that you have ceded any moral high ground when your move is, well, I just won't show up. Like, there's no coming back from that. This is what's nuts. Galactic talent allows athletes to get away with things that you and I never would be able to. Like a Walmart greeter, a person working at a register at a grocery store, a waiter, a ticket taker at a movie theater, security for a concert. None of these people are allowed to just no show, no call. I mean, have you ever worked in a restaurant? They'll tell you there's only really one way to get fired around here. No show, no call. Like, if you're going to have an unexcused absence from your shift, that's it. It's done right there. It doesn't matter how good you are, how much you tip out, how much you people like working with you. No call, no show, no job. That's the way the world works. You know, part and parcel of the employer-employee relationship is reporting to the employment. So Kyrie is a guy who makes about $500,000 every single time that he plays basketball. And for whatever reason, he is not showing up to play basketball games. And Howard Beck can try to land it carefully and say, we really don't know what's going on. And I guess he really doesn't know what's going on. But we also have enough noise, I think, to know exactly what is going on here, with maybe an element of COVID being involved in it somehow. It looks like a guy who is very comfortable with a DNP, I don't feel like playing, which is something Kevin Durant now needs to be really concerned about. And the Brooklyn Nets are the mess that maybe he didn't ask for it, but he certainly got it now, and they are his team. So good luck with everything. It doesn't seem like it's going to land smoothly. That is for sure. We've got Steve Kerr coming up at 5:05 today. In case you missed him earlier, it was an awesome interview with the coach. We talked about the big trade that has been a huge part of the story all day long. We talked about the Warriors losing last night, how Domantas Sabonis was the perfect foil for James Wiseman, and we should have seen that coming more than we did. We'll explain that to you in just a little bit. But, you know, when you're looking for leaders and people who know how to run an organization, sometimes you got to start leaning with a recognizable name. How about this for a recognizable name for a leader? George Patton. Like, it feels like that's a good guy to hire, a good name to come and lead just about anything, even when Patton is spelled with one T, not two. Today, guys, the Denver Broncos hired George Patton. He is their new general manager with a six-year contract. He spent 13 years with the Minnesota Vikings. He's going to be 50 years old by the time the season starts. He was an assistant GM. He was the head of scouting department. You know, all the resume taglines that you need to be considered a GM to hire, he had them on his resume. And here's something that you probably would have lost some money on if you were asked to bet on it in Vegas. I know I would have lost this bet. What team over the last decade has drafted and developed the most Pro Bowlers? It's been the Minnesota Vikings. And he's been a huge part of those draft picks. You look back at the Vikings, 10 Pro Bowlers over the last decade selected by them, including wide receiver Justin Jefferson, Dalvin Cook, Danielle Hunter, Stephon Diggs, Anthony Barr, Xavier Rhodes, Cordero Patterson, Matt Khalil, Harrison Smith, the kicker, Blair Walsh, Everson Griffin. Again, not all these guys are still on the Vikings, but they were drafted by the Vikings, and this is the guy who is now running the Denver Broncos. Again, his name, George Patton. Pretty good name for a guy in charge of something, don't you think?
Well, there's one other way that he's really smart. Given the fact that the Broncos have nothing but ownership turmoil with lawsuits within the Bolin family, he went out and got himself a six-year deal.
Yeah, it's longer than any deal Elway ever had.
Yeah, it just, you know, well, Elway is still going to be in charge. But, you know, Patton said, I'm not coming there for less than 6 years because I'm not going to get caught in an ownership switch. That's a guy who's thinking ahead, even if it's just for his own benefit. And there are a lot of people who don't think about how the boss is going to behave when they're looking for a new job. And I think in pro sports, more than ever, you have to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's smart. He must have been in awfully high demand if he could extract a six-year deal out of him, though.
Beware the general manager who can't negotiate a plum deal for himself,
right? That's a good point. Yeah, that's true. Definitely not a good sign if you're in the room and you feel like, I'm getting over on this guy with this contract negotiation.
Yeah, totally, when you're getting over on yourself. So, very interesting move by the Denver Broncos today, and it's hardly a blip in the world of sports because the Houston Rockets pushed everybody to the back page. I will tell you, I don't know if Kyrie realizes this or not, but however his day is going, it's been made easier by this trade because it really felt like the whole world was ready to sharpen its knives and just feast on the body of Kyrie Irving, or the absence of Kyrie Irving's body, I guess we should say. And today, no one's even really talking about it other than, boy, he better get his act together and join this new team now because Brooklyn is trying to do something. And they really do need to do it in the next 2 years. We were just talking with Howard Beck, and he's right. Whatever the championship window was, close it by like 2 or 3 years. The Brooklyn Nets basically have 2 years to win an NBA title, and this is one of them. Or getting old and dying on the vine quickly with an overpriced roster of 3 Supermax deals could be your future with no draft picks coming to help save the day. It is a do-it-or-die move by the Brooklyn Nets indeed. When we come on back, it is our longest segment of the entire afternoon. We want you to stay with us. We're going to have a conversation with Steve Kerr after we get to the top of the hour. A What If Wednesday is waiting for us on the back end of our fourth and final hour, which is coming up in just a little bit. But the longest commercial-free segment you're going to find anywhere on radio is right around the corner, and we invite you to be a part of it here today. 888-957-9570 is the number. We are brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. Man, I just went outside. It's beautiful out, and I just checked the temperature. It's partly cloudy and a lovely day, 63 degrees, thanks to our Exergen temperature check in beautiful downtown Oakland.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7, The Game.
Thanks so much for coming back. You know, there's the show that you think that you're going to do, and then some news breaks, and then there's the show that you're actually doing. This morning, I figured our show today, Ray and Matt, was going to be based around reacting to last night's Warriors loss. They were in that game. They led 90-88 with less than 4 minutes to go, and then the Pacers go on a 13-0 run and c'est la vie. It's pretty much gone right there for the Warriors. That's where that one evaporated last night. We will get into some details in just a little bit. And we'll remind you that Steve Kerr is joining us about 5 after the top of the hour. So stick around for Steve Kerr today. One of the things that I thought we were going to be talking about was what it would take to trade for James Harden. Like, because it really felt like last night the Nets said, everyone, load up the trade machines and throw your best ideas at us. We're willing to move. As a matter of fact, we don't even want him around practice anymore. James Harden is officially to be had. So I thought we were going to be talking today about what the deal is that you'd want to put together. Well, the deal was obviously put together, and we know exactly what it is now. I am still stunned that Kyrie Irving is not part of it in some way, shape, or form. And you can talk about, well, I wouldn't want to trade one head case for another head case. But from an NBA talent standpoint, from another NBA talent, it seemed to match up more than any other talent really matches up in this trade. And what I thought would then happen, fellas, is that we would have Kyrie refusing to report to his new team and basically telling Kevin Durant, you can't trade me. And then having to go back and function with the Brooklyn Nets in some sort of really weird, awkward new universe there between the two. Like, I thought that that's where we were going today. And it turns out we are going to totally avoid that topic. But I did think that we were going to get a Kyrie refuses to report. And before you tell me that that's nuts, I mean, like, he's refusing to report to the team that's actually paying him that he chose to be a part of right now. So why wouldn't he refuse to be traded anywhere?
Yeah, that's well within the realm of possibility if it ever got to that, because I think, among other things, Kyrie Irving wants to be the master of his universe, and there's no way more compelling to not be that except by being traded. I mean, that's what Kyrie Irving felt when he got traded to Toronto. Or not Kyrie Irving, I'm sorry, Kawhi Leonard. He got traded to Toronto. He was happy there, but it always bothered him that it wasn't his choice, so that when he had a chance to leave, he did, even though he was leaving a championship team. So, yeah, I don't think that scenario is far-fetched at all. But I don't think it will preclude the Nets from trying.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I've never seen that specific thing reported about Kawhi, that he was upset that it wasn't his choice. Of course Kyrie might have gone crazy, though. He's going crazy now. I think the reason I didn't envision your scenario, and the reason I think, especially in retrospect, it didn't happen, is not because Kyrie would never. Kyrie would, obviously. It's because that's exactly why the Rockets wouldn't have. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rockets said no to a Kyrie offer, because even if he shows up, I think you're in a situation very similar to the one you have now. Is Kyrie Irving better than James Harden? I don't think so. He's different, but I don't think he's better, and he's not different enough that he turns you into a title contender. To me, the whole point here is to tear it down, and that means not having the highest salaried guy, not having the biggest head case, and Kyrie qualifies in both of those categories. So, you know, it's easy to view the trade as, man, the best player in it was Caris LeVert. Can't believe you traded James Harden, and the best you ended up with was Oladipo. The other way to look at it is, we finally got rid of James Harden. We got as many assets as we could, and hey, we got Victor Oladipo too.
I don't think Raphael Stone did a bad job at all here, the Houston general manager. And for a guy who's only been at this for a few months.
In a brutal situation.
Yeah, he extracted a huge price. I mean, I saw rumors that the Rockets were asking for Simmons, Tybull, and Tyrese Maxey and draft picks. And the Sixers said no, but in an open auction, which is what this ultimately was, they only really needed one team to just shovel assets. And Brooklyn was in a state where they were going into a season in which they thought they were loaded with one great player. And I don't think that's what they planned on. In fact, I know that's not what they planned on. So they said, okay, well, we'll get this guy, and then we'll worry about what we have to do with the other guy.
Who would have ever thought that the two teams we saw on opening night, Golden State Warriors and Brooklyn Nets, would be as different from those opening night performances as they are tonight? Both of them, for so completely different reasons. Like, the Warriors are using defense and finally some time together to figure it out, and the Brooklyn Nets have completely rewritten the script on the fly in the middle of shooting season one, or at the very beginning of season one here. They're bringing in a new director, new script writer, new showrunner, new lead characters. Wild stuff. It really, really is. The NBA can be sports on cocaine. There's no doubt. Like, when this league wants to give you something to go, wow, at, it's so good at it. It really is. And it's not even what happens on the court. It's all the drama that leads to what's going to happen on the court next. All the storylines, all the characters involved. So let's go to the actual on-court drama last night. Because the Warriors were in a game that was a good game, that was a fun game to watch. I almost at halftime tweeted, I like watching Warriors basketball. But then I thought, nah, that's just a stupid thing to tweet. There's no, but I really mean it. Like, I like watching this team, warts and all. Kelly Oubre misses and all. It is interesting watching it come together. I'm fascinated by how it's being built, how it's being tied together through defensive efforts and whatnot. There they were, up a bucket with 4 minutes left, and then the bottom just dropped out of that game. The Pacers really got hot. They go on a 13-0 run. They're up 101-90 in the game. And I said this to Steve Kerr. You're going to hear it when we replay that interview for you coming up in about 10 minutes. I thought that if Eric Paschal was playing last night, that's a game the Warriors would have won. Wiseman gets in foul trouble. They're playing Looney way too much, more than they want to. Eric Paschal's not available because he's not there, and that guy is a efficient 10, 12, 15 points a game kind of contributor and certainly the driver of that second unit in this early season. It was a shame that he was a missing piece, because last night that missing ingredient really was missing for the Golden State Warriors. They didn't have any scoring with that second unit to help them through.
No, I think we knew that the Warriors were a little thin there, that everything they had was going to be in those first five guys, six if you want to shave a little bit and include Bazemore as a guy off the bench. But this is who they are. And this is one of the things that they're going to have to overcome. And there are going to be nights like last night when they don't get anything from that next unit. And those are games that they're going to lose, even if you think they're going to win. It's just, you know, the Warriors are a team with promising notions and flaws. And it's the very, very definition of a middle-of-the-pack team in a tough conference.
Yeah, they are a middle-of-the-pack team in a really tough conference. I don't think there's any shame in that. I also don't think that's a totally accurate description of what happened in last night's game. The second unit, I thought, was pretty good. Now, yes, they did miss Eric Paschal, but I think that's more about the fact that James Wiseman was not all that great, and they, you know, they struggled with big men on the opposing team, right? So Paschal would have been a nice matchup, at least on the offensive end, to give Sabonis and Turner some trouble at some points. But look, I mean, Damian Lee is having a great year.
He is.
Kevon Looney played great yesterday. Kent Bazemore and Brad Wanamaker didn't have particularly good games, but they've basically been solid. I think one of the interesting surprises with this team is their depth is pretty good. And I don't think that's a mirage. I just think Damian Lee's a pretty good basketball player. You know, he's not an all-star. He's never going to be. He'll probably never start with any regularity in the NBA. But he can knock down shots. He plays hard on defense. He's a useful player. And the Warriors were missing some scoring punch last night, which Eric Paschal does provide, but you know who else is supposed to provide that is Stephen Curry and, you know, ideally Weissman a little bit. And neither of those guys did what you ideally would like them to do. That's the starting lineup. So,
and James Weissman was up against it. We should have seen it coming a little bit more than we did. Welcome, everyone, by the way, to your 5 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Domantas Sabonis is at the age and at the point in his career where describing him as a young NBA talent is still a proper way to describe him. You look at James Wiseman and you say, well, there's another young NBA talent. So one young NBA talent has got to be equal to the other young NBA talent, and nothing could be further from the truth in that just matchup between the two of them last night. And this is something that we asked Steve about coming up in just a little bit. The difference between a 19-year-old with nary a college game under his belt coming from Memphis and a 24-year-old Lithuanian is gargantuan. And I there is an older basketball player in what I'll call a Lithuanian 24 than there might even be available in an American 24. Domantas Sabonis, for those of you who do not know, he's the son of Arvydas Sabonis. So growing up around the game is what he did, but he was actually born in Poland while his dad was over here playing. So he grew up in Europe and then was thrust into the Spanish Basketball Association when he was 16 years old. And by the time he was 17, he was breaking in the highest professional league in Spain. We're watching Wiseman go through growing pains against grown man at the age of 19. He was 17 playing against grizzled Eastern Bloc basketball veterans and Spanish veterans. I mean, there is a very good world of basketball over there that you got to start respecting if you don't, because they crank out as many prospects as the NCAA does these days. So this kid is sharpening iron versus iron, if you will, against men when he's 17. And again, a Lithuanian 24 compared to where James Wiseman is in his development, it's the difference between a 40-year-old man and a 12-year-old pre-teenager. I mean, it really is. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful of James Wiseman at all, but Sabonis might have been a 10-year NBA vet. And he absolutely did everything he could to get Wiseman in foul trouble, to just put him in Dutch all night long when he was out there, making him uncomfortable, moving him off the lower block. He knew how to use his body. And James Wiseman also made a couple of real can't-have-those fouls in a game where he was conscious of his foul trouble but still was out on the perimeter. I can't remember who he reached for, but there was a really bad foul early in the second quarter, or I should say late in the second quarter, late in the first half, where, you know, there's a big difference between stepping into your second half with two or three fouls. He picked up that ticky-tack foul 30 feet away from the basket, and if you're Wiseman, you just cannot pick that up. You're 19, you'll figure it all out. But it was a rough night for him last night against a player who might, again, be a young NBA talent, but might as well be old man River in a basketball development measuring stick.
You know what I think, though? I think, interestingly, he handled the part with Sabonis okay. He, like you said, he had one dumb reach in. Then he got a couple of really tough moving screen calls that, like, there has to be some consistency right with that.
I think one he bought, the other was sketchy.
Yeah, I mean, there's just the whatever the situation with those individual, I think there were two or three moving screens he got called for over the course of the night. It's a call that has no consistency across the league. They should probably do something about. But I thought the problems were the same problems we've sort of seen all along, which I think are totally just 19-year-old problems. He's sometimes a bit of a spaz out there, I think is the easiest way to describe it. He's all arms and legs.
Stop
and occasionally
using that technical jargon.
Occasionally, the ball bounces off his hands and then his face and out of bounds and stuff like that. And occasionally, he commits a stupid reach-in foul. While Sabonis was obviously a challenge for him, as was Miles Turner, I thought he hung in there pretty well with those guys for the most part. And his problems to me all strike me as, like, he's a little discombobulated still, which I think is beyond normal.
It would be amazing if he weren't. Look at how difficult this league is for veterans, much less just got here with no training camp and with very little college along the way. I mean, we're not going to continue to make excuses for the guy all year, but it is important to realize.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.